Hey, my name is Xenu, and you're listening to Anti-Moon Boy News. We got a great episode for you guys today. We're going to be covering the Liquid BTC exploit that just happened. 3,400 BTC stolen. Another exploit. We're going to be covering the Gray Hat who did this and how they were possibly able to do that. And then we're going to think over AI and vulnerabilities as well. We're also going to be covering the big story in crypto over the past week, that being Zcash's rise in price, which is just silly at this point, but we will be covering that and asking ourselves, you know, how is this going to impact the price of Monero? Is it going to impact it? Is it going to impact the overall culture within cryptocurrency? Because I think there is actually something there. But also, I think there's a lot of exaggeration as well. And we got other news as well. We had another arrest that happened of ransom. We're not ransom, we're phishing individuals who were stealing a bunch of cryptocurrency. And out of the $260 million worth of crypto that they stole, guess which cryptocurrency they were using to clean it all up and wash it. So it's a good episode today. If you like the content, consider subscribing at xmrchat.com. Consider subscribing or donating at xmrchat.com/Xenu. There we go. I can do this. Before we get to the content, some little channel updates. I will be on the Monero Society podcast live radio show thing. It'll be next Saturday. Really excited for that. The Monero Society guys, they're grinding pretty hard. They're working their butts off, constantly putting out different content stuff. I don't see eye to eye with them on everything, obviously, but I do respect their hustle, and I think we're going to have a good conversation. So I'm looking forward to that. I've also started working on my next dot file interviews. I'm working on two of them right now. I'm not going to say anything about one of them. The other one is going to involve a Monero developer. So that is also being worked on as well. I'm pretty excited about that. All right, well, let's now get to the featured story of today, with that being Liquid BTC. Frankly, an arch nemesis of Monero, if I'm being honest with you. An arch nemesis of digital cash. An arch nemesis of Bitcoin. And there's a lot to unpack here, a lot of different angles to look at this from. But, you know, one thing I have to say that I've noticed is that it's been a pretty great year if you look at Bitcoin from the perspective of its self-healing. I really want you to think about that, because Bitcoin has been humbled by price. It's not going up like it used to. So people are starting to realize we can't talk as much shit. Not all of them, but a lot of them are. I'm noticing it. We saw our good old pal, Michael Saylor, get dragged through the mud more than he's ever been before. You know, this was a guy who has been worshipped and celebrated for years now, and he's been dealing with a ton of pushback for what is quickly becoming to be realized as a Ponzi scheme. And we've talked a lot about him on this program, so I won't rehash that here. But the long and short of it is, I do not see a good future for Strategy and what they're doing. And I think another bull run of diminishing returns is really going to blow up in their face. Another thing, of course, is the cold card hack that happened. A huge blow to a lot of the maximalists. These guys were total assholes who were always talking down on other projects. And they should not have been talking that much, clearly, as they were putting out vulnerable hardware wallets that were easily compromised and led to a major hack that happened, affecting hundreds of Bitcoin users. And recently, we also had the BIP controversy, which, you know, I've been critical of the BIP side, but I've also been critical of the Core side as well. And my happy kind of middle ground that I've reached is that all these sides kind of suck. And while the BIP crowd, I like the fact that they are challenging the kind of position that Core has put themselves in, and that they're challenging the ASIC miner dominance, doesn't seem like they really learned anything, or at least some of them, with their recent Blake 2B mining absolute failure and crash and burn, which I'm not even going to talk about in this episode. There's no point. It's just they're flailing around in the water, about to drown. People are jumping ship off that. But, you know, also they brought up good points, though. There is absolutely corruption with Bitcoin and Blockstream. And they were pointing this out a lot. And you know what? They've had a bone thrown towards them because of this latest exploit that impacted Liquid BTC. So, I mean, regarding Lightning Network and Liquid Network, they're a little different. Liquid is pretty much only used by institutions and exchanges and stuff. And it's like a federation of different entities. And, you know, if you look into Blockstream's seed funding, it's very similar to how we criticize Zcash, where they've gotten funding from a lot of like venture capitalists, and it's just not really in the spirit of Bitcoin. It's got ties to mainstream traditional finance. And whenever you see that, there should be alarm bells going off. Anyways, we've criticized this from the beginning, and there's been a lot of gaslighting going on, and it's only developed over time. And this is why members of the Core team who have embraced, you know, moving to developing Liquid and elements of Lightning Network as well, this is why we've been criticizing them for the past decade, because we think it's better if we just build on the base layer for Bitcoin. And so to that point, the BIP guys who were talking recently, were, I think they're right about that. It took them long enough, but you know, they figured out that, hey, this is kind of weird. Why aren't we spending actual Bitcoin? Why are we relying on liquid Bitcoin? It's not the same, right? And there's a lot of elements of trust me, bro, here, right? It's not decentralized like regular Bitcoin is. And so this was a big problem, big controversy, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, they had 4,000 BTC pegged in the Liquid Federation wallet. And purportedly, white hat hackers withdrew the entire wallet. Now, they're not really white hat hackers. I would call them gray hat, if anything, because they're not returning all the Bitcoin. But anyways, the funds were withdrawn via the Sideswap pegout authorization key, and that key was not compromised, nor were any others. Exchanges have been notified and have already paused or will pause LBTC deposits and withdrawals. Other liquid assets such as USDT, DPIX, and RWAs are unaffected by the security incident. Bridge nodes have been temporarily disabled, so no new transactions can be submitted to the network. Effectively, the liquid sidechain is paused until the issue is resolved. And you know, it's funny, to kind of illustrate how liquid it's used, it's only used by like institutions. It's not actually used by Bitcoiners. And I saw a tweet here from Lexi. He's kind of a troll on Twitter. His tweets are good. But he says that there's zero people complaining about this hack. Probably all the funds in Liquid were Blockstream's funds. I agree with that. Like, no one's even really complaining about this hack. It's a hack nonetheless, but it's kind of weird. If anything, people are just shitting on Adam Back and the other people associated with this hack. So anyways, the BIP guys, they got thrown a bone here. They're making fun of them, but also just a lot of the critics of Bitcoin maximalism over the years. Like I said, like, this is us kind of showing, like, yeah, Bitcoin, you're not as strong as you think you guys are. You know, these exploits and these criticisms are really starting to pile up. So it's an interesting cultural moment for Bitcoin. And I hope it continues. I hope the culture kind of becomes hardened by these incidents, because, you know, acting all smug when these exploits are happening is just not a good look. Now, this leads me to another thing I wanted to talk about. We'll get back to what happened with BTC Liquid and talk about the technical side of this incident. But on a broader level, like, exploits are happening all over the place right now. It's pretty bad. We've experienced it in Monero, mostly with different protocols, right? Has there been an exchange that has not dealt with some sort of exploit or hack or, you know, please update your nodes immediately, we found this major, you know, problem, blah, blah, blah. It's not like, you know, bugs aren't found regularly anyways, but this year has been notably worse. And especially with DeFi. And a lot of this probably has to do with the fact that people are vibe coding, or you have people who are just not as experienced making DeFi, so they're easy targets for more experienced hackers. But it's just happening more and more. And I would encourage people not to act too smugly about this, because it can happen to your project too. Okay, we've seen it happen to basically everybody. Now, knock on wood, Monero's been fine so far, but this could change at any moment. And I'm FUDing Monero right now. But seriously, this is why you shouldn't put all your chips in one basket, right? Because this bug that happened to Liquid affected its range proofs. And if you weren't aware, Monero, it uses range proofs. Now, the cryptography is fine, but the implementation fucked up. And so if we're not coding things properly with Monero, if the developers aren't doing their job correctly, the entire project could collapse overnight. It's something really to consider when you are buying a cryptocurrency. And this could happen to any project. It happened to Zcash earlier. They had an inflation bug. They claim it wasn't exploited, or then they backtracked and said they don't really know, or at least some of them did. I have episodes on that you could check out. Now, I don't think it was exploited, personally. I think the researchers, or the person who was doing research, he had an advanced AI model. He was able to find it using targeted, you know, directions or whatever. But this is a very real concern. And it kind of skewers a counter-argument I used to have about inflation bugs. Because let's be honest here, an inflation bug, that's the worst thing that can happen to Monero, right? And it's a possibility. It's a real possibility. Back in 2017, we had the key image analysis, or the key image bug that happened, and after analysis was found that it wasn't exploited, and we can actually prove that. But what if we had some sort of bug implementing Bulletproofs +++? That would be pretty catastrophic. And I'm not really sure what would happen. I think the project would continue. I think the idea that Monero would die overnight, okay, that is overblown, I would say. I think the spirit of the project would continue. Something would happen. There would be a lot of discussions, whatever. It's all hypotheticals, though, because we don't know the exact situation. But we have to kind of just be on our toes here. And so I trust the Monero developers. These guys are very smart. They're constantly looking over the code. But if you got some extra money in Monero, consider donating to these guys, because there's not a lot of them. And it's one of the things that we're just hoping can last us until we get full chain membership proofs out and everything works. It is actually a concern of mine, though. And I would actually go as far as to say that these exploits that are happening, driven by AI in many cases, that this is actually the biggest threat to Monero right now. I would be on the record for saying that. And then number two would probably be proof of work. We just need a stronger security. And then after that, I guess quantum. But I don't even know if I believe in quantum. I change my opinion on quantum like every day. Like one day I'll wake up and I'll be like terrified. Then the next day I'll be like, that's a nothing burger. I need someone to convince me on that one. But like, it must be the most divisive topic amongst, you know, developers and stuff, because I've heard wildly different opinions. Be that as it may, though. Exploits, though, are fucking everywhere. And I think we can all agree on that. There's been more exploits this year than I've ever remembered ever happening in crypto. And every project is finding this happening, and it's bad. So anyways, back to Liquid. What actually happened here? And it's a weird story here, and I'm going to read off from a GitHub link that I found. This is someone ran an analysis through an AI on it. But it looks like there were a couple bugs that were found. So I'm going to read the summary here and explain it as I go on. But on September 6, 2026, the Liquid network suffered a consensus split caused by a transaction whose output carries a range proof that is cryptographically invalid under its own asset context. Part of the network accepted the block anyway, part rejected it, and has not accepted any blocks since. Within 9 minutes, the attacker laundered the created value into two send to main chain pegout outputs totaling 3,900 BTC. And at 1425 UTC, the Liquid functionaries, following the accepting side of the fork, paid out pegouts from the Federation's Bitcoin wallet and batched mainnet transaction, and they list the transaction ID. The attacker moved the funds onwards within minutes. There were two bugs that were found. I'm honestly not going to really read these, but basically it involved the cache key, which is derived from the range proof bytes. And essentially what you could do is you could make a key to kind of screw around with the information that you were given. I'm really dumbing this down here, but like, this is technical stuff. I'll put a link down here for you. There are two different bugs that involve this range proof cache. Okay. There was, the first bug, which was found on 3/19/2019. And I'm not going to bother even really reading it because this is all technical, but this was not the exploited mechanism. Bug B was the exploited one. And the ambiguous key encoding, as it's described. And the reason this bug was created was because of the fix for the bug, ironically. So like, they figured out that there was an issue, and their fix actually screwed everything up. And the fix, which was called Fix Caching Bug in Range Proof Caching, was authored on 8/3/2026. And what it does is it computes the key as a salted hash over the raw concatenation proof commitment asset generator script pub key with no length delimiters. The proof and the script are both variable length and sit at opposite ends of the stream, so the field boundary between them can be shifted. So distinct proof commitment asset script tuples hash to byte identical streams. This is the exploited bug, which was reproduced byte for byte from the on-chain data. So this attribution is therefore the reverse of the obvious reading. The accepting side, including the signing functionaries and Blockstream's own infrastructure, was running the raced, unreleased fix code with attacker-primed caches, while the rejecting side ran prefix releases whose keying cannot collide for the attack. And 2 to 5 days before the attack, it was deployed to the functionaries ahead of any release. At the time of attack, and still today, no release tag contains the fix. The 23.3.x backport merged attack day evening, the attacker reverse engineered the public fix diff, found the boundary ambiguity the fix had introduced, dry ran the full mechanism on the functionary's own mempools 10 minutes before the attack, and exploited it at 1240 UTC. The deployed fix does not close the exploited hole. The bug B is unfixed in every branch as of this writing. So again, they introduced a fix to fix a bug, and the fix itself broke everything. And then they merged it to master. And this was 2 to 5 days before the attack. And when they merged it, somebody figured out what they were fixing based on the code difference. And then they ran a test or a dry run of the attack, and then they exploited it shortly thereafter. So, is it an inside job? Might be. It's a little fucking weird. That's a weird story. Whatever the case, it was exploited. And 3,400 of the 4,000 Bitcoin remain with Liquid now. And the white hat, quote-unquote, hackers kept 600 Bitcoin. I'm sure we will be finding more out about this story. Basically, the hacker and Blockstream have been communicating over the blockchain with PGP encrypted messages. So they've been in contact with each other. Definitely a weird story, though, where this bug did not fix anything. It just caused the actual problem, and then it was just exploited immediately thereafter. And that's the nature of the game here, guys. If a project releases a new, pushed release, and somebody kind of looks at what are the diffs here, they can figure out, you know, what is changing, and then they can reverse engineer it and then attack the project. And we've been seeing that happen kind of a lot. So if you are fixing a bug, I guess the solution is don't make the bug worse. Because everyone who didn't update was fine, evidently. And it's kind of funny. Let's say this happened in Monero. Let's say an inflation bug was found. I do have on good authority that we'd probably be okay, assuming it wasn't exploited. But what would happen is we would create a new release and we would push it only to like our top miners, which is kind of funny. Like, we have centralized mining right now. It's actually kind of protecting us in a situation like this, because we'd only push this release to the miners, make sure it solves anything, everything. Then we'd push it as a new release. Perhaps even through word of mouth, we tell everybody to update their nodes, keep it on the hush hush. And then we'd announce it as a critical update. Kind of funny how that works, but like that would probably really help out the project. The Zcash solution, when they found their exploit, was just shutting down the blockchain. And then you couldn't even send shielded transactions, which is kind of fucked up. That's what they did. So there's pros and cons for different solutions to this. It does require some centralization, though, and I think that is kind of what I'm getting at here, is some levels of centralization is helpful. And it's not ideal. Like, we want to move towards decentralization, but in this kind of time where you're having increasingly these exploits being found, it is concerning. Because in the past, I would argue that inflation bugs could be protected, because the only people who would find an inflation bug is like the mad scientist, right? The mad scientist who is bad and would then exploit it. Because to find an inflation bug, you have to be really smart. But now with tools like AI, it's making it so much easier to do this. Again, it's not AI, just people typing in, please create infinite Monero. It's not that, okay? It's more so targeted, someone who knows what they're doing but doesn't really know. You know, they're not like a super genius. Well, anyways, they can use AI tools and it makes them a super genius. At least that's the idea. It gives them a power up. That's the best way. It gives them a power up, and they're using this power up, and then they're attacking people. So that's pretty much it. Liquid BTC, fuck them. We don't really care at Anti-Moonboy. It's a bunch of institutions getting screwed. Kind of funny. So anyways, that is the Liquid BTC story. Let's move on, though, to what I was just talking about, Zcash here. So Zcash, oh my God. What the hell is going on in Zcash land, man? So I'm looking at them now on CoinGecko, and here's some stats for you. Past 7 days, Zcash is up 36%. The past 30 days, they're up 128.6%. The past year, they are up 2,319%. That's crazy. So they're currently the chosen coin by these VC Silicon Valley institutional types. And they are all pumped up right now. They're all posting on Twitter, shilling Zcash. And it's creating this very interesting situation because I ain't even mad because, you know, one, I don't care if other people get rich off crypto. Like, it's happened to so much absolute dog shit in the past. Like, Zcash doesn't bother me. But also, Monero's benefiting from this, right? Monero's doing fantastic right now. I couldn't be happier, right? So it's creating this interesting environment where, you know, by Zcash having this like absurdly inorganic pump, you look at the price chart, it is so fake, right? But it's paying dividends in that people who are actually then doing research, okay, maybe I should invest in other privacy coins. Well, the other top one right now is Monero. And that chart is looking phenomenal. And I've talked about this recently where I'm not a chart guy at all. I don't like talking about price movement and stuff. But I also can't lie. And Monero's having a great year with that, which is very exciting for the Monero community to finally get something going their way. But I got some interesting statistics here, though, that are kind of intriguing. The first is that Monero transactions on a whole have kind of stagnated. And it's been this way now for the past several years. It is trending upwards if you look at the 90-day moving average, but we're kind of oscillating between like 30 and 25,000 transactions a day. You know, something like where the 90-day moving average is 28,000. And you would expect that to go up considering how positive the price has been lately. It really hasn't, though. If you look at the raw transaction amounts, it's about the exact same. So that's an interesting outlier because you would expect that to go up. Zcash has gone up recently with their transactions, even though we're not seeing any indication of it actually being used. On all these websites, I still like it. There's one, a NanoGPT. They put out their transactional usage. Monero's in the lead, crushing. And Zcash is like 0.6 Zcash was used on their website. It's like no one cares about them. But they are having a pump in transactions lately because, okay, various institutions are all, you know, starting to, you know, pump this. People are wanting to buy it as an investment. You typically see transactions go up during price pumps. But yeah, it hasn't happened with Monero. And what's actually kind of troubling, though, is if you look at the hash rate chart of Monero, it's actually not that great. I mean, it's okay. It's like not bad. But the all-time high here, what was the all-time high? It was around 7 gigahash. And right now we're at like 5.7. You would expect that to go up with this price movement action lately, but it really hasn't. Or it has, but not as much as you would think it would. And the reason I find that to be a little concerning is because this is one of the main arguments for number go up is better security. So why isn't the hash rate also going up? Maybe it's a lagging indicator, which is fair. Like, you would think if maybe over the past month you've had an increase of people who want to mine Monero, well, then they have to go, they have to invest in things. And okay, so maybe it's a lag. But it is still kind of a head scratcher. Be that as it may, though, obviously Monero's enjoying this price pump. And what I want to say about this is that whether or not Zcash continues going up or down, I would not trade this. It's very corrupt. You're going to probably get rug pulled. You're probably going to lose. So I don't know. Throw some money at it on a gamble. Do your thing. It's not my time to say yet do it or not do it, right? It's not the point of this program. But what we are going to see, I think, is a narrative kind of shift where you will have privacy talked about more. And so then you'll have people debating privacy coins, which I fucking hate, instead of actual just projects that are used. But regardless, Monero will be talked about. It's inevitable. And what's really positive, though, and that what we're building, though, is, yes, we have transactional usage. We're having an increasing amount of people who are building stuff for Monero. You know, we are getting more eyes on the project overall. But also, like, we're sticking around. You know, we've been around since 2014. And that says a lot, because not many projects have been around for that long that have actually done anything. And so it is a big indicator, in my opinion, because we're actually, I'm looking at the CoinGecko chart right now. We're 14th. I'm very happy with that. I think that's great. We're right there. And, you know, with different people projecting different things, I think it's going to be a very positive couple of years for Monero. And I do think that privacy will be a part of that. People are now becoming more aware of Bitcoin not being as exciting. And if you have this one Zcash that's the chosen coin, Monero will pick up support because of that. The difference, though, is that Monero is actually, you know, an organic project. I just hope that this hash rate starts increasing, because that's starting to kind of concern me. Now, concern's maybe the wrong word, but I would expect it to be higher at this point. So hopefully that goes up. The other issue, though, is with the transactions, how do we break this like 30K barrier? You know, how do we start averaging 50,000 transactions a day? Is it even possible? And I'm not so sure. I'm not really sure, because like at a certain point, like you kind of hit the wall of like how many people who want to just use cryptocurrency. And at a certain point, it's just like people just want to buy it to get rich. And so we're going to have to deal with that. And we'll see what ends up happening. You know, if Monero starts getting listed on centralized exchanges again, you will see an uptick in transactional usage just based on that. I absolutely believe so. And I guess that's a good thing. We want more transactions being used, but obviously I would prefer it if transactional usage was based on buying stuff instead of just degenerate trading. Beggars can't be choosers, though, I suppose. But it's an interesting topic. Like, we have been kind of in this channel now for like the past 5 years. And it's been slowly upticking, but it's not where it should be. And I think we can all agree on that. The last thing I want to say, though, and this is, again, leading into the Moonboy kind of arguments for Monero, is I kind of have a feeling that full chain membership proofs are going to be a part of the Monero narrative. And once that happens, that's when you're going to get people really starting to promote Monero who don't know anything about it, because they're going to do their, what do you call that? Their due diligence. And they're going to be, oh, well, it's the next big thing. It's like, listen, dude, we are the big thing. We're the project people actually use. But people don't invest in actual usage. Instead, it's hypotheticals. That's really crypto today. All right, next up, I'm going to be reading out the sponsors of this program. We love our sponsors here. However, I'm going to be doing it as if I were being lowered into a pit of lava. Okay, let's do it. First off, we got Monero.forum. Whew, it's getting a little hot here. Okay, well, anyway, Monero.forum is a message board. That's right, you're tired of social media. You want to talk Monero. You want to talk Monero, and you want to talk about Monero, and you want to talk about it without social media stuff. I'm there. The cool kids are there. You can go and make some forums. This was not a good idea to do this bit. Okay, but that's Monero.forum. You should check it out today. Next up, we got, what do we got? I can't think. My brain really hurts because of this, because I'm being lowered into lava. I'm being lowered into lava. Oh, my God. Next up, we got Orange Friend. Of course, we love Orange Friend. Orange Friend is a pillar of the Monero community. Perhaps he can send me a helicopter, because I'm starting to get really hot. But Orange Friend, they're a directory for all the Monero needs. If you love Monero, you want to go on that website. They helped do MoneroCon and all that. And they still haven't sent me a helicopter to pick me up because I'm being lowered. I don't understand why I would need a helicopter, like a drone thing. That's what I need. Maybe you can find a drone thing on orangefriend.com so you could stop that. Stop by there. And speaking of stopping, unstoppable.money. Not unstoppable, but he needs to stop this fucking thing lowering me into this fucking pit of lava. Unstoppable money. I mean, it's unstoppable. It's they got a bunch of different cryptos you can put on their DeFi wallet, which I'm gonna be honest, I don't like the DeFi stuff. But you know what? I'll start buying them if you stop this fucking thing for lowering me. It's starting to get hot, guys. Starting to get hot. I don't know if I can continue this bit. I don't know if I can continue. Anyway, unstoppable.money. Check out their site. It's open source wallet. I can't even think. Who do we got next? MineInbox.io. MineInbox.io. They host my server, which is far away from here, where it's a lot less hot. It's fucking hot. I'm the microphone is way over. I am breaking my microphone with my voice. Go to MineInbox.io to buy a server or website like I do with AntiMoonBoy.com. And next up, oh God, we got Web Wipe. Wipe me down with some anti-heat fucking thing. I don't know what you would call it. WebWipe.io. They have a lot of stuff on there. You can clean up your web history. Hot. And also, you can recover wallets with their seed recovery service, WebWipe.io. Okay, that was that bit. I don't know. That wasn't as funny as I thought it would be. I was like, what is this fucking improv? But you know what? I'm not going to re-record that. That one time is enough. And you need the spontaneous Xenu. You know what I mean? Okay, let's run through some news and then wrap this show up. What do we got first? Okay, so first off, we have an update on Knitter.net. That's right. Knitter, the Twitter service that allows you to look at Twitter links without, you know, dealing with all those cookies and nonsense. Now, they had actually shut down following a legal... Well, basically, they received a cease and desist letter from the X Corporation. And so they went and sought legal advice. And after looking at said legal advice, they've announced that they're going to be continuing. So they should be up within a week. So that's pretty awesome. So love that website. I've been using that for the past 2 years now. So happy to hear they're coming back. We also have an update here from Graphene OS. Looks like they have good news about their Pixel 11. To kind of put it clearly, it still has the bare minimum of support for MTE at the hardware level. They say that they think they removed most of the hardware acceleration from the CPU cache to save money. They ruined the performance, so it ended up being fully disabled in firmware. It may still be usable. So before they were saying that Pixels might be done for Graphene, but now they've kind of changed their tune there. And it looks like we're probably going to get it. So that's nice. Lastly here, we have an article that I saw today regarding this kid named Malone Lamb. He was expected to plead guilty in connection with a $263 million social engineering heist. And so I went through the court documents on this case. And this thing is pretty insane. Here, let me pull up the article here from the Associated Press. It says here, a network of young men in their late teens or early 20s celebrated an August 2024 heist of up to $240 million worth of Bitcoin. And they went on a wild spending spree. So this is the headline. It says, party's over for crypto scammers who went on a spending spree after a $240 million Bitcoin theft. There was an August 2024 heist, and that was led by 22-year-old ringleader Malone Lamb. And they went on a bender, basically. exactly. And afterwards, FBI agents arrested them. Now, why am I mentioning this to you? Well, I went through the court docs, and it is very heavily talking about Monero being used to launder their funds. Successfully, I might add. This is from page 3 of the report, where it's defining different things. It says, it defines what Bitcoin is, and then it defines virtual currency, which I'll read. It says, virtual currencies are digital representations of value that, like traditional coin and paper money, function as a medium of exchange, i.e. they can be digitally traded or transferred and can be used for payments or investment purposes. Virtual currencies are a type of digital asset separate and distinct from digital representations of traditional currencies, securities, and other traditional financial assets. The exchange value of a particular virtual currency generally is based on agreement or trust among its community of users. Some virtual currencies have equivalent values in real currency or can act as a substitute for real currency, while others are specific to particular virtual domains, like online gaming communities, and generally cannot be exchanged for real currency. Cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ether are types of virtual currencies which rely on cryptography for security. Cryptocurrencies typically lack a central administrator to issue the currency and maintain payment ledgers. Instead, cryptocurrencies are algorithms, a distributed ledger known as a blockchain, and a network of peer-to-peer users to maintain an accurate system of payments and receipts. And so, I'm going to pause. In this court document, they mostly just refer to virtual currencies being used. So this is a broader kind of note about how these individuals, they would steal Bitcoin and then swap it for virtual currencies. But here's what's interesting. Right after that, they have a whole section on Monero. It ain't long. Here's the section on Monero, and you can actually look this up. I'll post a court doc. It says Monero, XMR or Monero, is a virtual currency which uses a blockchain with privacy-enhancing technology to obfuscate transactions to achieve anonymity and fungibility. It is widely regarded as a privacy coin and believed untraceable by law enforcement. That's all they say. That's all they need to say. Ooh. Ooh. That right there is pretty damn bullish, if you ask me. In this article, or in this court document, basically what they were doing, they were stealing funds, and then they were constantly laundering these funds. And they were using like a third party as well, and they're swapping into Monero and then swapping into other things. Now, how are they caught? Well, what ended up happening is they went on a bender, and they were just being fucking idiots. They were buying homes everywhere, buying Lamborghinis, a Rolls Royce. They're all buying these cars. And I'm going to actually read here from another court document I found regarding when Lamb was arrested. So this is from the document. Following the laundering of these funds, the defendant went on what can only be described as an outrageous and exorbitant spending spree. Over the course of a few weeks, the defendant became notorious in the Los Angeles nightclub scene. Government surveillance captured the defendant at a Los Angeles nightclub, spending hundreds of thousands of dollars a night and tossing out handbags valued at tens of thousands of dollars. Management at the nightclub informed the government the defendant attempted to pay in cryptocurrency and was spending upwards of $500,000 a night at the club. Then he says the government is in possession of a receipt from one of the Los Angeles nightclubs where the defendant spent $569,000 in a single night. And the defendant also spent the victim funds on the collection of luxury automobiles, some valued as high as $3 million. In the post-Miranda interview, he admitted to purchasing 31 automobiles. 31. Many have yet to be located, like the automobile that he sent to his friends that had his name painted on the side. The defendant and his friends flew on a private jet from Los Angeles to Miami and continued spending the victim's money. The defendant rented multiple homes in Miami, including a residence on Hibiscus Island, along with two other luxurious homes near the water. So yeah, I mean, they were being out of their minds bad with OPSEC. I mean, it's as if they wanted to get caught because they weren't lying low at all. And they immediately got attention. And my guess is they were just being watched from the beginning because suddenly they have all this money. there was probably a tax investigation going on. And then I was reading another document. It says that, his IP address got linked to a KYC exchange. As always, it's metadata. And that just built the case even more. And eventually, they had enough information where they were able to arrest him directly. And then he confessed everything. And then all these kids just flipped on each other, from what it looks like. And they were able to get all this information. No XMR was seized at the end. But they know it was used because there's phone records saying it and all this stuff. But all these different Ethereum addresses and Tether addresses were seized. There's a whole list of them. So, you know, the reason I'm talking about this story is, I mean, obviously these kids are pieces of shit. And we're not supportive of what they did here. But the reason is because, like, they were using Monero. Like, it's the obvious cryptocurrency of choice. And the reason we talk about the concept of darknet market maximalism is exactly this. This is, Monero has built up a ton of respect in this regard, and it's right there. We repeatedly see it mentioned as this cryptocurrency that's very powerful. I would imagine that there was some sort of timing analysis being done. I imagine they subpoenaed all of these swap exchanges. I know ThorChain was being used as well. That's actually mentioned specifically in the document. Other stuff was mentioned as well. Exchanges, EXCH exchange was mentioned. But we don't know the extent of what they were actually looking at with the Monero. But they probably did do some timing analysis. Like if they did like a swap of like, you know, a huge amount of Monero and then suddenly that exact amount goes into like Tether, you know, a Tether address, guess what? It's probably the same person, right? So things like that, I'm assuming happened. But, I mean, right from the mouth of the government, they said, yeah, Monero is untraceable. And the reason for that is because they can't just look at the Monero blockchain. They then have to work around it. And so they're looking at text messages that they all have. You know, they're looking at, you know, exchanges where... Or they're looking at the wallet addresses they have confirmed that are theirs and working backwards. And they're trying to piece everything together. But they can't just look at the Monero blockchain. If they could do that, this investigation would be a hell of a lot easier. But they can't. So it's another interesting story about Monero being used. And these kids were fucking idiots. They literally, it's the meme of like buying a Lambo. This kid bought 31 cars. Okay. We got two XMR chat donations this week. XMRchat.com/Xenu. If you like the content and you want to donate here on the program, you can do that. And I got two big donations this week. First one's from Nemesis. He gives 0.1 XMR. Well, thank you very much for that, Nemesis. Very kind of you. And he says, just occurred to me, been listening to your show for over a year after Gabe from Libre Solutions had you on. Just want to say, great show. Keep it up. Really enjoying the addition of DAW files as well. Well, that is very kind of you, Nemesis. And I think it's very interesting. You mentioned Gabe. Yeah, I'm actually probably going to be on his show again pretty soon. He had sent me a message. I think he's going to be relaunching his podcast or he wanted to interview me again. So I think I will be on the show again. So you should be looking forward to that. And yeah, he's a cool dude. Underrated interview that we had together. He's very smart, knows all about this stuff. I think it's awesome that you got on my show through him. That's why I do these different podcast interviews and stuff. So thank you again, Nemesis. Really appreciate it. And lastly, we have a donation from Bappy, or Be Happy. I don't know how to pronounce it, but anyways, who cares? He gives me 0.2 XMR. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate that. That's a huge donation. And he says, hi, Xenu, longtime listener here. I really enjoyed the interview with Taylor Hulsmans. Keep up the good work. Well, thank you very much for that big donation. Really means a lot to have support like that. And, I gotta say, Taylor Hulsmans was awesome. I thought it was a great interview. Very thought-provoking. And when I saw his presentation that he did for Ethereum, and I'm like, this guy's pretty, he's based. Like, it was just like very like red pilled on how the internet works. And it was also interesting from a, I guess, a philosophical level, where he's not afraid to talk about like the reasons why we might have bot driven narratives and stuff. And this is a big deal. Like, it's only going to get worse from here. And so we had a great discussion, and I hope he ends up, you know, pivoting and developing something with Monero for his image board. I think that would be pretty cool. He seemed pretty interested about it. And it's also pretty cool to talk about like image boards, or like even like just Ethereum too, because I don't know too much about Ethereum. So yeah, doing research into like the botnets, for example, was mentally stimulating for me as I got to like learn stuff myself. And it just helps me develop. So that's what I'm trying to use these interviews for. It's not just for you guys. It's also for me to like learn about new things. And yeah, as I mentioned previously, dot files is really open-ended in terms of who I'm interviewing. Like, I want to keep it mostly in the cypherpunk realm. That's pretty much where all the content's going to be, presumably. But if I find something that interests me, I will definitely, you know, interview them. It's not going to be like fucking Theo Von or whatever, but I have a lot of different ideas of kind of adjacent topics to, you know, cypherpunk, but also to like philosophy. You know, for example, my second episode with David Z. Morris, that was like the first hour was all about effective altruism and stuff, which is unlike anything else I've ever done. But it, of course, tied into SBF and that whole scandal. But if you guys have any suggestions, people who you're into, who you like, I'm always happy to hear them and stuff. You know, there's like other podcasts out there which I enjoy that I kind of poke around, see if they're interviewing people who I think would fit this show's kind of character as well. I also like finding people who are a bit exclusive, because I'm a little pretentious like that. But I want to have like a nice collection of interviews that are, you know, both at the same time eclectic, but also kind of fit a certain type of theme, if that makes any sense. The intention is not to have, you know, a Monero podcast. However, as I mentioned earlier in this episode, I will be interviewing a Monero developer / researcher, which I think is going to be pretty awesome. And I've started doing my research on that, like actually pretty much today. So that should be out, I don't know, probably like a month from now. We'll see what ends up happening. I'm going to have to do some reading before I interview him. And I also have another interview along the way that I can't really comment on yet. We'll leave it at that. It may never come out, so we'll see what goes on with that. But again, I'm totally open to, you know, different suggestions you guys might have. So definitely, you can DM me or email me or just leave a comment, and I'll definitely look into it. And we got some cool stuff cooking up. All right, so believe me on that. Anyways, guys, I'm gonna head out. xmrchat.com/Xenu. Again, if you want to donate, thanks to Nemesis and Bappy for your super donations, and I'm gonna get going. See you guys next week.